This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean County in Bloomington Normal, 88.3 up in Pontiac, 97.1 in Lincoln, covering most of Central Illinois. We hope to have a great show for you today. I'm here with my wife, Lynn. We're enjoying the cool weather, and I hope everybody out there is enjoying all this cool weather that has come in. And I guess it's going to last only just the few days here, and we'll be back to some warmer weather, but at least not really hot and humid, I don't think, like it was before. And hopefully we're looking to some good fall weather. Watching the weather report, Lynn, has been sort of crazy. They keep on talking about we're in some kind of a drought. I don't know. My lawn finally, after about 4 or 5 days, is just finally dried out. And I don't think that right now it's fall.
It looks like it could be mowed again. It seems like you just did it.
Oh, yeah, that's true. But it's fall, and I think the crops will benefit from any more rain now. The corn's pretty well done. The beans might have maybe a week or two ago, but I don't think probably anymore. So if we're going to have some dry weather, the fall is a good time to have dry weather. The farmers can get in and get their crops out without, you know, trying to mud them out, and it'll be beneficial in that respect. And then again, since there's no crops, it's not really important that we get a lot of rain right now. And usually we get plenty during the winter and in the spring, so I don't think people have to start worrying about the fact that we're going to be, you know, short of rain. No, we're usually not.
No, I don't know who came up with the idea. We have a drought, but the weathermen seem to think so.
Right. At any rate, remember, we're brought to you by you. So if you're able, we would appreciate any donation that you can make. And you can go to our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Go to that website. You can make a donation there, or you can just go and find out more about us. And we bring you an eclectic, that is a variety of EWTN and Catholic Spirit Radio brings you a variety of topics and subjects concerning Catholicism all over the spectrum, pro and con on a lot of different things. So
yeah, another way the station you can help donate to the station is if you order on Amazon. And I know a lot of people are doing that now, ordering and not going out shopping. Remember to put in AmazonSmile.com and then go for your favorite charity, and you can put in 2820communications.com. And the station here will get 5% of, what do you call it? It's not a rebate, but they'll get 5% of your purchase. The profit off your purchase. So it's a good thing to do, keep in mind.
Right, any way you can help. And like I say, you get a lot of various topics here from both a local point of view and also from our EWTN world and national point of view. Some things, of course, you'll agree with, some things you won't, but it is important to have a variety of things on all sides of topics, and that's what we try to do here. Today, I hope we have a good show. We're going to talk about today is some of the talking points that we made last week, and we're just going to have a discussion about them a little bit lower key. And, of course, there are some things going on right now in our society. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice, has just passed away. I think we're going to maybe talk a little bit about that and the differences between her and her friend Antonin Scalia, and how that relates also to the Catholic position on authority, governmental and otherwise, in the Catholic position on justice. So we'll try to talk on a lot of those things. First of all, before we do that, I'll just go and touch on all the points that we talked on last week, and then we'll have a discussion, Lynn and I, a little bit about whether or not the comparison that we made last week, is that something that is as serious as the article that we used made it, and I'll go over some of the points in that article. But before we get any further here, I want to turn this over to my wife, Lynn, and see if she has anything further to say. Is there anything that you wanted to talk about before we start, Lynn?
Yes. As far as the TV news goes this week, it's been rather pleasant not hearing about the riots.
Yes, it has.
But in their excuse, not the TVs, not the stations' excuses, the people that are rioting couldn't take the smoke from the fires on the West Coast, the forest fires.
Yeah, at least that was one of the opinions of a news comment, was that it settled down because the air quality in Portland wasn't real good.
Wasn't conducive to do what they wanted to do.
Although it seems strange that you wouldn't stop on account of that and then go back into the situation after that clears up and start fires all over again and create the same kind of thing, you know, artificially that was caused by, of course, the natural fires out in California. So
right. Wouldn't the natural things burning be better than the plastics and everything else that they're burning when they break into places and burn plastics and everything else that's in there? Aren't those fumes worse, you would think?
Could be. It depends
know.
On what the...
Anyway, it's rather pleasant not having to listen to that.
Yeah, so... At any rate, I'll go over, Lynn, some of the things we talked about last week, some of the talking points we made. We did an article last week from... Actually, that article was from the magazine First Things, and it was the October 2020 issue. And the article that we did was called Suicide of Liberalism, and it was written by Gary Saul Morson. And what he was doing was comparing the situation in Russia in 1905, the early part of the 20th century, to the situation that we are having here in the United States in a fairly early part of the 21st century. And the question is that you know, a lot of times comparisons, you know, comparing today to yesterday are sometimes, you know, not valid, or there are certain differences. And so what I'm going to do is mention the things that Mr. Morrison talked about and how, you know, that we should have a concern for that same kind of thing going on today. But is the situation as dire maybe as the article made it, or maybe as we presented it? And we'll go over some of those points and have a discussion on them a little bit and see if we can wrap this up. And then, you know, there are so many things going on, and I think a lot of them need to be addressed, but we can't do it all the time. So we're going to maybe wrap some of this up a little bit and talk about some of the key things that are causing disturbances in our own society and ask how dangerous is this situation really. And we'll go from that point of view. So... At any rate, go ahead.
You're not asking me how dangerous things are, are you?
Well.
Are you?
we will be, I guess. At any rate, comparing what's going on today to the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, and we talked about the attack on government and culture that was going on at that time. People in uniforms were being attacked, and, of course, you know, that's happening today. In Russia back at that time, there were riots and terrorist acts, and we have, you know, some of that going on today here, and also worldwide, there's a lot going on. We've been involved in the Middle East for years, and that has led to a lot of tensions in this country and worldwide. And then there was killing going on in Russia at that time. People were being attacked for their political positions or...
And religious.
And religious positions and for who they were. There was liberal support for actually this kind of suppression, and we are seem to be getting that, a lot of support from the liberal side of some of these rioters and other people as being somehow or another harbingers of a new paradigm or a new revolution, and somehow, you know, that they're being looked at as some kind of being heroic, opposing the oppressive forces in our society, and a lot of that was going on in Russia, and it didn't turn out to be very good or that way at all in the final analysis. Liberals were calling, and when I'm using liberals here, I'm using the liberal, you know, the idea of people who are supposedly in for peace and supposedly for airing all sides of a topic and supposedly for being open-minded, but back at that time, it seemed like they were all taking one side, and we seem to be in the same situation here. We talked about amnesty was going on back then. People who were committing crimes were being let go, and we have the same proposals here today that somehow there shouldn't be any bail for people who are arrested for committing violent or destructive acts of property. There was praise for them from the liberal side, and we're getting that here. And there was this reason that liberals did not oppose some of the extreme things that were going on then because they were afraid of being called reactionaries. It was a name that was imbued with all kinds of things, of being non-progressive, of being against progressive change or improving society, being against new things, being against more open-mindedness and all of that kind of thing. It just carried a lot of weight. And we have the same thing here with racism. People are deathly afraid of being called a racist, and that has been used against people for a long time, or in order to not have to argue, but simply to put the other side down by calling them that name. And so a lot of liberals were afraid, each one knowing that things were going too far and things were wrong, but waiting for somebody else to speak out because they didn't want to lose their status among, you know, the liberal crowd and the liberal idea. People identifying themselves as intelligentsia rather than identifying themselves as a responsible person in a community, or identifying themselves with their job or with their family or whatever, instead of identifying themselves with a larger idea of being part of the intelligentsia and being afraid to lose their position there. We have those comparisons also that are going on. And again, this idea of total certainty of their ideology, that is somehow or another only one side of the equation should be heard. The other side is simply and totally wrong. And we have a lot of that kind of thinking. In other words, anymore it has turned into free speech for me, but not for thee. Something maybe if people remember a man by the name of Nat Hentoff talked about a whole number of years ago, probably 30, 40 years ago, saying that this was starting to happen on the liberal side, that all the emphasis on freedoms of expression and freedoms of ideas and, you know, freedom of argument all became one-sided, and we sort of have that today too. So, but the question is that sometimes comparisons, trying to compare, say, something today to something that happened, say, with Hitler, you get a lot of that kind of stuff going on today, and it doesn't turn out to be the case. Or trying to compare, say, the United States Rome and predict the fall of the United States as the fall of Rome. Some of those things don't work out. We understand that. The question is that on one side, is that article that we did last week taking things too far or too heavy-handed? And maybe things are, you know, not that bad. Most of the time when there are disruptions in society, they usually subside and they go back to a sense of normalcy. And that usually happens over periods of time. But in certain situations, it doesn't happen. In certain situations, things seem to come together. And then other events take place that no one could have predicted. And maybe three or four or five forces begin working at the same time. That's how a lot of revolutions come about, and that's what happened with the Protestant Revolution back in the 16th century, when you had Martin Luther in his movement against the status quo of the Catholic Church. It probably would have petered out and died down, but all of a sudden then along came Henry VIII, and the revolution in England, when Henry anglicized the church, the Catholic Church, and took it over and became the head of the Catholic Church in England and turned things upside down there, that had a huge impact on what happened in Europe. And it was a tipping point that actually caused a reformation that is still echoing with its effects down to this day, that probably never would have happened had not some other incident come along. And this concatenation of events is what really caused the flood, you know, to spill over the dike, so to speak, and wipe them out and become a real problem. Usually what happens is we have the floods, and usually the dikes hold, even sometimes when they're weakened, and you get some damage, and you get the, you know, the ability to stop it and repair it, and then the water goes down, and things stabilize, and the damage is repaired, and life goes on. But every so often in history, there are these concatenations of events, as Voltaire called it in his book, Candide. So we're asking these questions today then on these topics that we talked about last week, and that's what we'll go into in the second part of the program more. Are these points, we'll go point by point, something that is really as serious as this article says and maybe as we have been taking them? Or is it something that most people feel will probably subside and we will return to a more stable base and maybe come together in some manner? And so these are some of the things that we'll talk about today and see if we can wind this up a little bit. But at any rate, so that's the question. Is this comparison that this Gary Morrison made fair and valid? Is it likely? And is the media biased, you know, along these lines? So we'll get to that and talk about that a little bit in the next part of the program. We'll talk about, is democracy possible without an impartial media? Has the media gone over too far to one side? Is there enough media in this country on the opposite side? Or is there enough balance? Maybe the internet contributes somewhat to that, or is the internet itself skewed? These are all kinds of things that we need to talk about. Have our courts gone too far in being biased? Are they biased to one side or another? Are they more fair than we think they are? Without fair play, that is, without the idea that we have to be careful on both sides of what we do because the shoe could always be on the other foot. In other words, it's one thing, say, to suppress free speech when you're trying to do it in favor of your own cause, but is that going to come back at you? Or have we simply abandoned that idea that we have to be careful? That's what happened in Russia, the idea that the one side was right and the other side didn't exist. And that there was the worry about the shoe on the other foot was set aside. And then when it came time for there to be checks and balances against going too far, those checks and balances weren't there, and the whole situation tipped over into a revolution that didn't turn out to be for the very good. And so we will talk about some of those things when we come back, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Here's an easy way to donate to Catholic Spirit Radio. As an Amazon shopper, you can donate 0.5% of your purchase cost to Catholic Spirit Radio, also known as 2820 Communications. Before making a purchase, you will always need to log into smile.amazon.com, search and select 2820 Communications, or choose this charity under account settings. Thank you for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio through 2820 Communications with your Amazon Smile purchase.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. We're back from our break. We're talking about some of the talking points that Gary Saul Morrison made last week in his article, The Suicide of Liberalism. And we're asking, is the article maybe skewed too much to one side? Are things really as bad as the article seems to make them out? Can we really draw a comparison like this? Should we? Is it valid? Or is it going too far to do this? And so I'm going to ask this to you, Lynn. We have to keep in mind one thing in that article. A key point of the article was is that which meets no resistance does not stop. So I want to keep that in mind at all times, that even if something doesn't seem as strong as maybe that article made it, or maybe we're making it here, is that it is a good point to remember that to be too complacent sometimes can actually contribute to something going too far. And so we have to keep that in mind. You know, that which meets no resistance does not stop. And that seems to be a scientific fact. And it also seems to be a fact also in human history political ideology, in politics, and in social movements, and the course of human events, and the course of human beings themselves. So that's one thing to keep in mind. But what do you think of that article, Lynn, that we did last week? Is the comparison valid? Do you think? Is it fair?
I think it is. Because if you are silent and don't voice your opinion or your feelings, you become complicit with what's going on. Silence equals complicity. That's what Father James Altman had said, and other people down through the ages, and I believe that's true. Well, who was it that said, if evil occurs when good men do nothing?
Exactly. That is a good point to remember, that things can, we can overreact, and that's not good. But we can be too complacent and underreact, and that's not good either.
Right. And sit back and say, I don't want to be bothered.
And it's always a difficult thing to compare one era to another or compare one thing to another. I mean, metaphors sometimes are very dangerous. Making comparisons sometimes can be very dangerous because things aren't exactly alike, but it's a huge part of human reasoning and understanding. I mean, that's how people learn. That's how you learn in life and life experiences. You have experiences, and then when you meet new things, you compare the old experiences to the new ones, and you try to draw conclusions from the old ones as to how to meet the new ones. And I don't think myself, I agree with you, Lynn, that what we did last week is going too far, or that article is going too far. The one thing I want to make clear is this, is that it does seem that we have in our society a movement, and whether people think I'm name-calling or not, it seems to be mostly over on the liberal side, in which there is this idea of progress that can't be wrong, or progress that is absolutely good, or changes that are always in the right direction. And there is an unwillingness. There is this constant calling of the other side names, or objecting by name calling, or an emphasis on everything being racist, or anybody, disagreements. And there is a movement on the left that seems to suppress the other side, and that's a very dangerous thing in society to do.
Oh, very much so. If you don't let your opponent or whatever speak their piece, you've got a problem.
And I want to be fair here, because the same thing could be said of anybody. I mean, even the other side can become the same. You can polarize things so that neither side, or when I say side, neither side, it could be a number of sides, are willing to concede that, they could be wrong, if not totally, at least about some things, and be willing to listen to the other side. And so,
things stand now, the opposite side cannot get a word in edgewise. You can't oppose them. You're called all kinds of things, and you're shut up. They will not, you can't express your feelings, or you're put down or silenced.
And this is a dangerous situation for everybody. My guess would be that a lot of this is not being promoted down at the lower levels of society. That a lot of this is being promoted by people pulling strings on a very higher end of society, people with influence behind the scenes, and probably for reasons. And a lot of times those reasons are monetary. If you want to look, follow the dollar, follow the money. And the people at a lower end are being manipulated into these extreme positions for the benefit of other people that they may not even be aware of. So that's something also to keep in mind, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
And if you get situations like this, we do have a democracy. We have democracy, and we can talk about that. There are good points about a democracy. There are also bad points about a democracy. But the point is that a democracy can degenerate from a society of law into a society of mob rule. And I think that a lot of this is what happened in Rome, and we don't have to, you know, make direct comparisons that our society is like Rome or something like that. But the point is that there are inherent weaknesses in every society, and I think mob rule can be one of them that would be inherent in a democratic society. And the best way to rule against that is to have a fair and impartial media. What do you think in that respect, Lynn? Is it absolutely necessary in a democracy to have a media that tries its best to report the news impartially and give people the facts apart from their own particular biases and point of view?
Yes, it should be fair. And the important thing is it needs to be truthful. What it said needs to be truthful. And somebody needs to monitor that. Because otherwise, they get too slanted. And the more it's slanted, the more it goes. The more it's like cutting down a tree. You start out, and it's a little bit of tips, a little at a time, and it starts to fall, and boom, then it hits the ground, the big bang.
And your point is that the word somebody needs to monitor that. That sort of sends up, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of sends up flags.
Red flags. Who should be the monitor? And it seems to me if people will not police themselves, then they're asking for some sort of an authoritarian policing outside themselves.
Yes, and it should be. It should be God.
Well, of course, you know, from a Catholic point of view, we will get to that. We will get to that, especially that there's a huge difference. We're going to talk about that, I think, when we talk a little bit about what happened. You know, Ruth Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice on the court, has passed away, and it's going to cause some problems for our society. But we can talk about the Catholic point of view of authority, and maybe the point of view of authority on the side of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her position on the court, and then her friend, but people who say, you know, he was the opposite on the spectrum from her, and that is Justice Antonin Scalia. And the Catholic point of view, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's point of view, and Scalia's point of view may give a sort of rounded out picture of the ideas of authority that are being carried, you know, in history and today. And one of them being, you know, the cosmic idea of authority, that is the Catholic idea of authority, and perhaps, of course, other Christians also idea of authority. And then the different ideas of authority, two specific ones, Ruth Bader Ginsburg's idea and Justin Anthony Scalia's idea. And we'll talk about those things. And is the Catholic idea of authority compatible with either Justice Scalia's or Justice Ginsburg's idea of authority? And if not, why? And, you know, how significant are those differences? So we'll get into that a little bit, too. What do you think?
Yes. When do you want to get to it?
Okay. We will as we,
all
go,
right,
as we go along here. But at any rate, my opinion would be that if a democracy is going to work, and if we're going to avoid some of the extremes that happened in Russia, or some of the extremes that even happened in our own country with the Civil War and other things, then we need a media that takes its responsibility very, very seriously, and a media that is willing to buck, you know, the system that it finds itself in. I mean, this is what didn't happen in Russia.
I think you could find that here in America. It probably 50, 60 years ago, wasn't it the idea that the writers themselves, the authors of the article and the newspaper men, did not become friends with everybody?
Yes, I think so.
So that they could remain unbiased?
I think so. This idea, you know, we had it in Russia, in which lots of individual people on the liberal side, and when I'm saying liberal here, I'm talking about liberalism in its broadest sense, the idea of free speech, taking all ideas into consideration and so forth, they did not assert what they at least believed was real liberalism, because each one was afraid that they were going to be put down by the others. And I think we have a lot of that in our media today, is that the reporters are afraid they're going to be, you know, lose their job or not get a promotion or lose the respect of all of everybody. Each person unwilling to take the risk of being, you know, put down by his fellow, his peers. And so going along with the crowd and allowing a skewed idea of what's going on to be presented, rather than trying to present things as they are and be as fair as possible. That is, our news media has become an advocacy instead of an organization. It tries to set before the public the events that are actually happening.
Correct.
And so...
You can see that big change again, this late 60s, 70s, and 80s, until it came full bloom. And now the media has its own agenda totally to push. But its own agenda is swayed to one side or the other. Exactly. And they don't see both sides.
Exactly. And after a while, you can become blinded, you know, when you do that. After a while, you start seeing everything through a certain lens. And then it's difficult to be impartial anymore, because you can't see things except, you know, you can't see the forest because of the trees. I mean, you're so much involved. You're living in the water itself like a fish in water. And so you can't really understand what's going on outside and around you, because you live in an environment in which everything is seen through those lenses and seen in that way. And you lose your ability to have a proper perspective on the world. So I think I think it was H.L. Mencken, I believe, that said, you know, when talking about how a newsman should be trained or come up through the ranks, and that is, he said, he should always keep an arm's length away from being friends with politicians or friends, you know, in other words, don't get too friendly with one side or the other. Always keep yourself at arm's length and always be skeptical. You know, you don't have to be cynical. You don't have to look at everybody and everything as being somehow or another bad, and being cynical and, you know, have that cynical sort of look at the world that everything is corrupted and no good and can't be fixed. But you have to you do have to be skeptical. And, you know, that's said so much by the media, but they don't follow it anymore. They'll say something like, you know, if your mother tells you something, check it out. But then they don't really follow that. If a certain side says something, there's this tendency to believe it. And if another side says something, there's a tendency to disbelieve it. So I think those are important things.
Don't you think the basis of this all comes down to we have what we claim is a democracy, and it's supposed to be a republic?
Well, the thing is that I don't think we have this idea of a republican form of government, and there are so many people.
I'm not talking about Democrats and Republicans.
No, I mean a republican form of government.
Yes.
As you said, a republic. In other words, a republicanism, not a republican.
Right.
But republicanism, yes, the idea of a republic, which is, you know, a restricted form of democracy.
Right.
Yeah, in other words, where you have a constitution, a set of laws, and you have a respect for the minority, and you have minority right, you know, the will of the majority with respect to the rights of the minority and that kind of thing. But it is, a republic has a tendency to degenerate into a democracy, and in a large country, it's difficult to have a total republic.
Because when you get into being a democracy, then the mob rules. That's in my mind. You know, the majority is going to decide what everybody else thinks, does, worships, all down the line. Education, everything. It's a mob rule.
Exactly. And so when you don't have an impartial media, and this brings us again, let's get over to that, and we'll talk about that in the last section here. You also, not only do you have to have an unbiased media, you have a media, you know, nobody can be completely unbiased, but you have to have organizations that work against their bias, that try to take their bias into consideration understand it and keep it under control. And so the other important thing that you have to have, I think, in order to have a republic or democracy that works, is you have to have courts that work hard not to be biased. And I think we're getting a lot of courts that are also in the same situation.
They're very swayed.
Mm-hmm. They're very swayed. It's the same thing. You get that in Russia. In other words, the people that are on those courts aren't necessarily evil or bad people, but they don't want to lose face in the eyes of their peers. I mean, they look at themselves as not their identity isn't with who they are as their job. That is, I am a judge and my job is X, Y, and Z. They look at themselves as part of a group such as the liberals or a group such as the intelligentsia. This happened in Russia. And they start worrying about doing things that might cause their group to turn against them. And they fear they'll lose face or they'll, you know, lose respectability among their peers. And they're afraid to speak out, and they make decisions based on pleasing the group rather than following, you know, what they should follow as their job. And that happened also in Russia. So this is something that has to be guarded against if you're going to have a society that stays stable. So at any rate, we'll come back and talk about that, and then maybe we can talk a little bit about the differences between Catholicism and the differences between Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Judge Scalia, and how authority applies from a Catholic point of view, and how it applies maybe from a secular American point of view. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Here's an easy way to donate to Catholic Spirit Radio. As an Amazon shopper, you can donate 0.5% of your purchase cost to Catholic Spirit Radio, also known as 2820 Communications. Before making a purchase, you will always need to log into smile.amazon.com. Search and select 2820 Communications or choose this charity under account settings. Thank you for supporting Catholic Spirit Radio through 2820 Communications with your Amazon Smile purchase.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio. And we're talking about some of the things that are going on in our society. We're talking about our show that we had last week, talking about the comparison between the Bolshevik Revolution and the early part of the 20th century to with the way things are going today in the early part of the 21st century, 100 years later. And we're asking that the comparison that we made last week, is it a valid comparison? Are things as at a critical point and as dire as the article seemed to make them out to be and perhaps as we presented them? Or is it being a little bit too extreme, and will things subside? There was the idea in that article back in the time of Russia that people used the phrase, the pendulum will swing back. You know, in other words, everything will swing back the other way. The pendulum will swing back to the other side. Sort of a complacent statement that allows people to think everything's going to be okay. But sometimes things don't go that way. Sometimes it's like a snowball rolling downhill. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and all of a sudden it doesn't stop. I mean, things usually contribute to the momentum of something. It's just like if you read Hilaire Belloc's explanation of the Protestant Reformation, things had happened like that before. There were objections to various corruption in the Catholic Church. Of course, it was a worldwide church, and any organization has corruption in it, and it always needs to be reformed. And those kinds of things happened in the history of Catholicism before reforms were made. You know, things muddle along, and people somehow muddle through, and things return back to their more normal course of events. And as you say, the pendulum swings back. But every so often, a number of events come together just like they did then. This so-called concatenation of events come together, and things are added to a situation that no one could have expected, and they become bigger and bigger, and the events get out of control, and you have a huge cataclysm in history such as the Protestant Reformation or a cataclysm in history, maybe as the revolution, you know, American Revolution, or you have the Civil War, or you have other, you know, worldwide events that change the whole course of the world, and no one would have expected them to happen. They usually don't happen from one specific cause. Things come together just like things can come together when a flood gets out of control.
Yes, just like with everything that's going on in this year of 2020, it's been bad enough with everything that's going on, the plagues, the floods, the earthquakes, everything that's going on, and then the political upheaval, the people on the streets, and then the Supreme Court judge dies, and now we're going to have an uproar about who's going to take her place.
We have this, you know, this whole idea.
And it's crucial.
Right, of, you know, climate change. I mean, we have the fires in California. If you add enough things together and certain things happen, you know, and events can get out of control. And that's what we were trying to talk about last week. But we're going to talk about here, if we don't have good courts, if the courts become biased on one side or the other, and I also want to talk here about authority. In other words, what are the different ideas of authority? Justice Ginsburg put a lot of emphasis, as did Scalia, and to be fair to her, that it's important to understand the will of the people and to understand that, you know, on a lot of things there should be a vote. She herself was not very satisfied with the actual Roe versus Wade decision, the Roe decision of the Supreme Court. She thought that it was... There were, and I can't get into it now, but there were a lot of things wrong with the Roe decision. I mean, it was made in violation of a lot of the rules of good legal procedure and also the Constitution itself. But on the other hand, Ruth Bader Ginsburg also ruled a lot of times from a position of what she thought was justice, that is, trying to understand what is the just position to take, even if the Constitution allowed for something else. And I think Justice Scalia's position is more that the Constitution allows for a broad range of the people's will, and that most things should be decided by arguing about them and then voting and then following the will of the people. That is, the authority comes from the consent of the people. And there is a lot of conservative belief along that line, and that Scalia's position, that is, the consent of the people is the end all and be all, and was not compatible with Justice Ginsburg's position, which is, while the will of the people is important, sometimes justice overrules it, even if the Constitution would allow a broader interpretation. So I think that's what's going along those lines. The Catholic Church's position is different than that, and I want to read, for example, from Pope Leo XIII, what his position was on the power of authority in a democracy. And he said, "Very many men of more recent times, walking in the footsteps of those who in the former age assumed to themselves the name of philosophers, say that all power comes from the people." Sound familiar?
You hear that slogan
all the time. Power to the people, and all power from the people.
Power of the people. Mm-hmm.
But he says, but from these, Catholics dissent, or at least we should dissent, although a lot of Catholics today go along with that idea that, in other words, authority rules by the consent of the governed. And the Catholic Church, of course, does not agree with that at all. There is an incompatibility of Americanism and Catholicism. And I know you hear somebody, you know, I've heard on EWTN itself, there are figures who say that John Courtney Murray, the Jesuit priest who wrote the book We Hold These Truths, he said that he was able to show that Catholicism and Americanism can be reconciled. I happen to disagree with that, and there are a lot of other people, I think, that do as well. That he did not show this at all. In fact, the first part of his book says that the separation of church and state was something the founders did just as a matter of good law and as articles of peace. That is just to keep the peace and to keep different factions from fighting with each other. But in that same book, John Courtney Murray later goes on to say that in America, the state has a monism, of power. And, of course, that's the truth. The state can overrule religious principle when it wants to and does. And so there is a conflict there. And then the Pope here is saying that this idea that all power comes from the people, he's saying that the Catholics dissent from this. He goes on, he says, but from these Catholics dissent who affirm that the right to rule is from God, not from the people, as from a natural and necessary principle. And the Pope goes on to say, in a democracy, the people do have the right to select their rulers. They have the right to designate who will be in authority. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's perfectly okay in a democracy. But he said the people do not have the right to designate what that authority shall be. In other words, all authority from the Catholic point of view comes from God. And it comes from those principles and dogmas that were handed on to the church in the first place. In other words, it looks upon itself as the, not a, but the church started by Jesus Christ, the Son of God, who is God himself, and that the dogmas and precepts of that church were handed to it, and it was given the authority to teach those precepts and dogmas and hand them on to posterity, hand them on, down. And so, therefore, it was given that authority, but no more than that authority. And that's where all authority comes from. And so, and the church would say that just because the people want something, or the people vote for something, or the people designate that they want X, Y, or Z, it doesn't necessarily mean they have that authority to have it if it goes against God's law. Martin Luther King himself, if we want to go through the civil rights movement, I've said this before, said that he agreed with St. Augustine that all authority comes from God, and of course that's what the Catholic Church agrees with, and that therefore a law that is not in accordance with God's law is no law at all. In other words, it's an unjust law, and an unjust law is no law at all. And that's what the Catholic Church teaches as well, that the authority does not come from the consent of the people. The authority comes from the consent of God, and the people simply designate who the authorities will be that will carry out God's law. They do have that right, but they don't have the right to be a law unto themselves. And so the law has to be formulated on God's law. And if God's law is broken, then it used to be that the church could step in and say that this is a violation. They would make those decisions. And now we have these decisions, the idea of it being made by the people themselves, and that is contradiction to Catholicism. And Justice Scalia goes along pretty much with the American idea, which was, of course was inherited from John Locke and Thomas Hobbes and others, this idea somehow or another that government is formed by the consent of the people. And the Catholic Church would disagree with that and say that government comes from the authority of God. It doesn't come from the consent of the people. The consent of the people is only to ask who shall be their representatives in authority, but that authority is separate from them. And so is that pretty clear, Lynn, how the difference is? Mm-hmm. And I'll get to what Justice Scalia says here in a minute to look at it here. Here's what it is. I'm reading here from Liberty, the God That Failed by Christopher Ferrara, and it's written from a Catholic point of view, and he's quoting Justice Scalia himself, and it says, Justice Scalia himself has expressed a complete acceptance of this Lockean view of the place of religion in the state. Speaking at the Gregorian University in Rome in 1996, he declared in perfect Lockean fashion that the responsibility of government is the here, not the hereafter. I believe it is the job of the state to take care of the natural man, and it is up to religious individuals and associations to take care of the supernatural man. So there is a separation between the body and the soul, the state, you know, and the heaven, the earth and heaven, that Catholicism does not permit. And because Scalia was a Catholic, but he's referring to here to the oath that he takes to the Lockean idea of the state, that there is this separation, and in Catholicism there isn't. Scalia went on to say that in a democracy which has nothing to do with man's supernatural self, the majority must have whatever it wishes, including the right to legalize abortion. And here is a quote from Scalia. If the people, for example, want abortion, the state should permit abortion in a democracy. To say, ah, but it is contrary to the natural law, is simply to say that you set yourself above the democratic state and presume to decide what is good and bad in place of the majority of the people. I do not accept that as a proper function. But that is directly in contradiction to Catholicism and the teaching of the Church. The idea that authority can come from the consent of the people, that if the people consent to it, that they can actually authorize abortion. And the Catholic Church would say, no, there are certain things that are intrinsically wrong. They are intrinsically evil, and they are a violation of God's law, and that the people themselves do not have God's authority. Authority comes from God. The people are not God. And so, in effect, you can see the difference here between Scalia. He is following the Constitution. Of course, I guess he's taken an oath to follow it. But from a Catholic point of view, there is a discrepancy there that really can't be resolved. And people try to pave it over and resolve it, but it can't be. So at any rate, we have that going on today too, Lynn.
Yes, we do.
So there are a lot of things that are going on. I mean, we've got, you know, the pandemic that is going on and is tearing our society apart and hurting our economy extremely badly. So that is an event that could be very, very disruptive. And then in addition, like you say, you know, we have an election coming up that can be thrown into the Electoral College. It was last time, and people were not very satisfied with that. A lot of people do not accept the results of the election that was thrown into the Electoral College. We have another one coming up, then the same thing could happen. That is a serious event. And we have the terrorism that is going on in the world itself, the Middle East that we've been involved with. We have the problems that are going on in our own cities, the rioting. We have a failure of the police power in the country. I mean, it seems to be our courts and our police seem to be getting out of control. And then we have this death of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Supreme Court justice, and the huge differences between her idea, Scalia's idea, and the Church's idea. And then, you know, we have the possibility of a new Supreme Court justice being nominated, and you can imagine what that could be like. We had the last fight over Judge Kavanaugh turn out to be horrible, and we could have that going on right before an election and the election coming up. So there are a lot of factors out there that are very volatile. And so I don't think that article that we talked about is really off the mark and warning us that we had better be very, very careful, because things don't always subside when you have this many events going on. Is there any event that I've left out?
I don't think so, but there is a warning from the second letter of Peter. To Peter, chapter 2, it begins, false prophets will also arise among the people, just as there will be false teachers among you who secretly bring in destructive heresies, even denying the Master, bringing upon themselves swift destruction. And many will follow because of their greed, And because of them, the way of truth will be reviled. And in their greed, they will exploit you with false words. From of old, their condemnation has not been idle, and their destruction has not been asleep. They've prepared it.
At any rate, I think, what we've talked about here, we don't want to be over-alarming in some of the things we're saying. Maybe we can, get off of this subject hopefully for a while. But we're asking everyone out there listening, try to keep fair-minded, look at both sides of things. This country, more than anything else, needs a tolerance of everybody's ideas and a respect for the dignity of all human beings and people. And more than anything else, we need moderation in what we do and what we say and how we treat each other. So hopefully these events will be resolved and we can return to a more stable pattern of society, and the things won't come to a head into the kind of destruction that happened in Russia in 1905. But it is something we should always keep in mind.
Keep it in mind.
So pray
pray the 54-day rosary.
Pray. And,
go ahead, Bob.
Okay, pray for America. Pray for the people that you disagree with. And pray for, stability in our society. And try to act with moderation and with some kind of understanding that there are a lot of different things coming together here that could be very, very volatile.
Yes.
So we'll end with that. Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen.
Amen. Keep on guard. Keep awake.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.